Well, now I want to bring you a selection from Huckleberry Finn. Now, this is a book about a boy. Some of you have been boys. And the rest of you have had a good deal to do with boys. Now, Huckleberry Finn is a boy who lived a great many years ago in the Mississippi River Valley. He was ignorant, unwashed, insufficiently fed, but he had as good a heart as ever any boy had. And he was the only really independent person, boy or man, in the community. And for this reason, I suppose, he was continually happy. We liked him. We admired him. We enjoyed his society. And since his society was forbidden us by our parents, we enjoyed it all the more. Now, in this book, Huckleberry tells his own story, all by himself. You don't know about me without you've read a book by the name of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. That book was made by Mr. Mark Twain, and he told the truth. Mainly. There were some things he stretched, but mainly he told the truth. Oh, that ain't nothing. I never seen anybody but lied one time or another without his Aunt Polly or the Widow Douglas. The widow, she took me for her son and allowed she would civilize me. She cried over me and called me a poor lost lamb. And she called me a lot of other names, too. But she never meant no harm by it. Well, then she dressed me up in some of them new clothes, and I couldn't do nothing but sweat and feel all cramped up. Pretty soon I wanted to smoke, but the widow, she wouldn't let me. She said it was a mean practice and weren't clean, and I should try not to do it anymore. Ain't that just the way with some people, though? They get down on a thing when they don't know nothing about it. She took snuff, too. Of course, that was all right, because she done it herself. Then her sister, Miss Watson, a tolerable slim old maid with goggles on, she took a set at me, the spelling book. She worked me middling hard for about an hour, and then the widow made her ease up. I couldn't stood it much longer. And for another hour, it was deadly dull, nice fishy. Miss Watson was all the time saying, "Don't put your feet up there, Huckleberry! Don't scrunch up like that, Huckleberry, sit up straight! Can't you try to behave?" And she told me all about the bad place, and I said I wished I was there. She got mad then, but I never meant no harm. All I wanted was a change. She said she was gonna live so as to go to the good place. Well, I couldn't see no advantage in going where she was going. So I made up my mind I wouldn't try for it. Then one night I lit my candle, went up to my room, and there sat Pop, his own self. He tore into me something awful for dressing up and putting on airs and going to school. Then he took a dollar off me and went downtown to get some whiskey. Long in the spring, he catched me one day and took me up the river to a little log cabin over on the Illinois shore, and I never got no chance to run off. Pap, he was so handy with his hickory, I couldn't hardly stand it. I was all over welts. He was meanest when he got to drinking, which was most of the time. Once after he'd been drunk over in town and laid in the gutter all night, He come back and says how folks was saying there was gonna be another trial to get me away from him and give me to the widow for my guardian. Then he got to cussing and says he'd like to see the widow get me. Well, then he took a swig or two and got sort of warmed up, went to ripping again. Whenever his liquor begun to work, he most always went for the government. This time he says, "Call these government watchers, look at it and see what it's like. Why, here's the law standing ready to take a man's son away from him. A man's own son, which he's had all the trouble and all the anxiety and all the expense of raising. Just that man got that son all raised up and ready to go to work and do something for him. Give him rest. Why, the law up and goes him. They call that government. Why, a man can't get his rights in a government like this. Why, looky here, there's a free nigger over there from Ohio, a mulatto, most white's a white man. And he had on the whitest shirt you ever see, and the shiniest hat. And there ain't a man in that town what had his fine clothes what he had on. And what do you think? Well, they said he was a professor in college and could talk all kind of languages and know everything. That ain't the worst. They said he could vote when he was at home. Well, that let me out. Thinks, what's this country coming to? Well, it was election day, and I was just about to go and vote myself. I wasn't too drunk to get there. When they told me there was a state in this country where they'd let that nigger vote, I drawed out. I says, I'll never vote again, them's the very words I said. They all heard me. Country may rot for all me. I'll never vote again as long as I live. Old Pap, he was carrying on, so he never noticed where his old limber legs was taking him. And he went head over heels over a tub of salt pork and barked both shins. And the rest of his speech is all the hottest kind of language. Then he let out all of a sudden with his left foot and fetched that tub a rattling kick, but it wasn't good judgment. There was a boot that had a couple of his toes leaking out of the front end of it. Well, I ran off from Pap pretty soon after that, and I hid out on Jackson's Island. That's where I met Miss Watson's Jim. He says he run off too. Well, I promised I wouldn't tell on him. I knowed I'd done wrong. I knowed folks would despise me and call me low-down abolitionist, but I didn't care. I wasn't going back there again anyway. Jim and me, we found empty section of log graph. We went off down that river together. We run nights and laid up and hid daytimes. We just let that raft float wherever the current wanted it to. It's lovely to live on a raft. We lay in our backs and smoke our pipes, looking away into the sky. Not a cloud in it. Sky looks ever so deep when you lay on your back in the moonshine. I never knowed it before. Now fur a body can hear on the water since night. Once or twice a night we'd see a steamboat slipping along in the dark, and every now and again she'd belch a whole world of sparks up out of her chimney, and they would rain down in the river. And look awful pretty. Then she'd turn a corner and her lights would wink out and her powwow shut off and leave the river still again. I'd go to sleep and sometimes Jim wouldn't wake me when it was my turn to stand watch. He often done that. Then when I woke up long by daybreak, he'd be sitting there with his head down betwixt his knees, moaning and mourning. I never took no notice nor let on, but I knowed what it was for. He was thinking about his wife and children way up yonder, and he was feeling low and homesick, because you see, he hadn't never been away from home before in his life. And I do reckon he cared just much for his people as white folks does for theirs. It don't seem natural, but I reckon it's so. We kept looking for Cairo down at the foot of Illinois where the Ohio River comes in. We said we'd sell the raft and get on a steamboat and go way up the Ohio amongst the free states, then be out of trouble. Jim, he says it made him all over trembling and feverish to be so close to freedom. He says how the first thing he'd do when he got to a free state, he would go to work saving up money and never spend a single cent. And when he got enough, he would buy his wife, which was owned on a farm near Miss Watson. And then they would both go to work and buy the two children. And if their master wouldn't sell them, he'd get an abolitionist to go and steal them. Why, it most froze me to hear such talk. Why, Jim, he wouldn't ever dare talk such talk in his life before, coming right out flat-footed and saying he would steal his children. Children which was owned by a man I didn't even know. Man who had never done me no harm. You see, I begun to get it through my head that he was most free, and who was to blame for it? Well, me. It had never come down me before what this thing was that I was doing. My conscience got to stirring me up hotter and hotter. And finally I says to it, "All let up on me, will you? I'll paddle ashore at the first light and tell." Very soon one showed. Jim, he got all excited because he thought it was Cairo. But I says, let me paddle ashore in the canoe and see Jim. It might not be, you know. Well, then he got the canoe ready for me and gave me the paddle, and I shoved out. When I was about 50 yards off, he calls out, "There you goes. The old true Huck. The only white gentleman that ever kept his promise, old Jim." I just felt sick. There I was paddling off all in a sweat to tell on him. But when he says that, it just kind of seemed to take the tuck right out of me. And I went right down certain whether I was glad I started or whether I weren't. But I says to myself, I got to do it. I can't get out of it. Right then, along comes a skiff with two men in it, with guns. And they stop, and I stop, and one of them says, "What's that yonder? A piece of raft? You belong on it?" "Yes, sir." "And a man on it?" "Only one, sir." "Well, there's five niggers run off night up yonder around the head of the bend. Is your man white or black?" "He's white." They went off. I knowed I'd done wrong. I guess weren't no use for me to learn to do right. A body that don't get started right when he's little just ain't got no show. Then I says to myself, "Hold on. If I'd have done right and give Jim up, would I feel better than I do now?" "Well, no," I says, "I'd feel bad. I'd feel the same way I do right now." "Well then," says I, "what's the use in my learning to do right When it's troublesome to do right, and ain't no trouble to do wrong. And the wages is just the same. Well, I was stuck. I couldn't answer that.